I looked through all my old cards because Holden basically wanted any card that was shiny. And I found some random Magic cards floating around, and I was like, I'm going to be rich. And then I looked them up, and they're all like 3 cents. So
yeah. Disappointing. No, that's right. Howdy, it's Friday, December 5th, 2025, and this is episode 268 of Due for a Win, the Atlantic City podcast. I'm Kyle Eskin, joined, as always, by Craig Stone. What's good, Craig?
Sleep would be good if I got it.
You wouldn't know about that.
Yeah, I got about 4 hours of sleep last night. I've been staying up watching late-night Caps games the two nights before that. I'm just making all sorts of good life decisions.
Were you doing anything else those nights?
Editing the podcast.
Surely that has to have been the longest period between recording and putting out a podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. It was like 12 days. Part of it is Thanksgiving and stuff was in there and I went away and then I came back and work was crazy. Part of it is I kept telling myself, just plow through it, cut out the long pauses and post it. And then I would start listening and 8 of the first 10 words of this segment I was editing would be like, you know, or whatever. I was like, I can't do it. I got to cut some of this out.
The people have to know the truth.
Someday I'll just post a raw one and people will get to hear that neither of us can form a complete sentence.
That's what the people want. Give them what they deserve.
That's going to be the Patreon content. I think I've said that before, is access to the raw episode minutes after it's recorded.
You need to pay extra money for that wonderful content.
The fact that I can look at the little waveform and recognize the word like, stuff like that. Surely AI can be trained to cut all that stuff out.
I probably can do it now.
Sounds like you're editing the podcast from now on, and by you, I mean Claude.
Sure. Sounds like a plan we could try and see how it works out.
All right. Would you rather? I didn't have a good one, so I'll give you a bad one. Would you rather go to Atlantic City?
On Monday?
On Christmas Day or New Year's Eve?
Christmas.
And you have to consider your family and all this.
It's not close. I mean, I do not want to go to Atlantic City on New Year's Eve, so Christmas Day. 100%.
So when I thought of this, I was like, surely Christmas is just a completely empty day in Atlantic City, which actually sounds kind of nice.
I think you would be surprised, but it's certainly going to be a quarter or less of the people as New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so I looked it up on the old Atlantic City subreddit, and people said it is incredibly crowded on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Not as crowded as New Year's Eve, for sure.
Yeah, maybe it's closer then. I think if it's close at all, you have to say New Year's Eve, just because it makes the wife and children less upset.
Yeah, but you open all the presents, you eat an early dinner, and then you head to the casino. That sounds like a good time. That
sounds great.
Bring the kids to the casino, leave them in the car, as one does at Maryland Live.
I mean, you don't need to worry about it, because it's wintertime.
It's cold out, yeah. You give them one of those aluminum foil-looking blankets that's in the back of your trunk.
You're like, all right, it's bedtime. See you guys later.
Let's do it. I'll be in Maryland on Christmas. Let's go.
Parents of the year.
I would also pick Christmas. I mean, obviously, the family part is prohibitive. There's no way I could ever go to Atlantic City on Christmas. But the idea of going on New Year's Eve, I can't think of things I would rather do less. You know what I would do if I was
It's probably good people watching, honestly.
It is. If I was going on New Year's Eve, I would not be in a casino at midnight, for sure. I would be somewhere else, like some bar or something doing a New Year's Eve thing that's not as insanely crowded as the casino will be. Or just be in the room, watching the ball drop on the TV.
I can't tell you the last time I was awake when the ball dropped.
What? Wow. I can't remember the last time I wasn't awake at midnight on any day.
I mean, I can't remember the last time I wasn't awake at like 6 a.m. on any day, so.
It's true. We're very opposite schedules. We're very opposite in lots of ways.
Yeah.
That's why the podcast works. Mm-hmm. Insert little jingle here, odd couple and all that stuff.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah. So we got some interesting news, very surprising stuff on the social media, which is that AC Beer and Music Festival is going to have its 20th edition, or at least 20 years. I don't know if it's actually 20 because of COVID, in April of 2026. And it's going to be the last one ever, which I found quite surprising. I feel like it does very, very well. But it's going to be one day only this year, April 11th. Two sessions, noon to 4 p.m., 6 to 10 p.m. I know there was that one year they tried to do it twice, and I think the outdoor version was quite hot.
It was in July on Baderfield.
Didn't they cancel the outdoor version one year?
I don't remember. I remember us talking about how there is nothing I wanted to do less than go to a noon to four session in July at Baderfield.
I wonder if the popularity of it has faded quite a bit in recent years, because we went in 2011, which was quite a long time ago.
It was pretty crowded, and we went to the early session, which I would assume would be less crowded, frankly.
Yeah, I think the craft beer craze was at a peak then, and I think it's come down a bit.
I think famously that was the first time we stepped foot in Tony's Baltimore Grill afterwards.
Oh, yes, that's true.
When we, or at least I, was extremely, extremely inebriated.
We were all very drunk, and then we went, and I think most of us took a nap before going back to the casinos. We were staying at the Courtyard off the boardwalk. I remember that. All right. Should we go to the last one?
I mean, I see you have a caveat. I mean, you'd be fine with me, I think. My kid's spring break is a week before yours, yeah, as always, because your kid's spring break is at a ridiculous time every year.
It starts with Easter and goes from there, or starts with, mm-hmm, Good Friday and goes from there instead of leads up to it.
Ours always ends with Easter.
So I get back from Disney the night before the AC Beer and Music Festival, so I don't think there's any way I'm going to the AC Beer and Music Festival. When I saw this, I was like, April, we could make that work. Let's do it. And then I looked at the calendar and I was like, oh, we're not doing that.
I mean, you literally couldn't make a month and a half work on the calendar, not a single day. So
that's true. I'll never go to Atlantic City again.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to say, if I were the marketing department for, you know, a festival or whatever, I wanted people to come, I might say it's the last one too. So.
Oh, good point. Cynic.
Does it really mean there's a last one? Or even if it is the last one of this iteration, if it's successful enough, nothing is stopping someone else from doing the same thing, basically.
That's true. They'll just slightly rename it. It's going to be the AC Beer Music and Tattoo Festival.
Yeah.
In 2027. I don't know why I went to tattoos.
Nah, it makes sense.
Get drunk and get a tattoo. Everybody come to Atlantic City.
The kind of people who like craft beer also like tattoos, in my experience.
Also, AC Craft Beer Tattoo and Beard Grooming Festival, Podcasting Festival.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm just trying to think of what, like, generic white dudes like.
They love podcasts.
And it shouldn't be hard for either of us, since we fit that MO to a T. They love having beards and glasses and podcasts. I don't remember who tweeted that about the picture of you, Tim, and Table James Games. You did not have a beard, so.
No.
And you got some LASIK, so you don't even have glasses. Come on, man.
And I'm not even really white, so.
Be true to your heritage. All right. Want to talk about some New York casinos? This is the New York Casino Podcast now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have to, because it's in the name of the podcast. So, 3 New York casino licenses were awarded. This is according to amny.com. Sure.
I had to find the link that wasn't behind a paywall.
Yeah. Amny?
AM New York.
All right. So the 3 casino licenses awarded were to Resorts World in Queens, which we've talked about, next to JFK. Metropolitan Park in Queens, next to Citi Field. This is a partnership between Steve Cohen and Hard Rock. And Bally's in the Bronx. So what do you think?
I mean, I know that MGM backed out talking about how close they were to each other. And it does feel funny that 2 of them are in Queens and 1 of them's in the Bronx. If you put pins on a map, they would look very close. But I think that the Queens ones are going to be much more Long Island focused, and Bronx will be more like
New York.
You know, Long Island is in New York, but more like Western New York, Connecticut area. I do find it fascinating that Hard Rock and Bally's are among them, because they have Atlantic City casinos, obviously. What are your thoughts on what this means for Hard Rock and Bally's Atlantic City in particular? Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's neutral. I don't think it matters too much either way. I think if anything, maybe it's a slightly good thing for these properties insofar as they can build their brand and it'll be easy for people who happen to get into one of these 2 properties to go get free nights in Atlantic City, especially if you're more of a mid-level roller. Because I think these are going to be quite expensive.
We have a comment about that in a second. I have very far apart opinions on what this means for Hard Rock and Bally's.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because of how good I think each company is. I think it just comes down to that. For Hard Rock Atlantic City, it adds a property that, you know, you can go and get comps. And Hard Rock Atlantic City does well. For Bally's, my concern is they get this Bronx casino and it does well. And Bally's in Atlantic City still does very bad. And then at some point, they're like, why are we still operating this Atlantic City casino? So my super hot take in the moment was Bally's Atlantic City closes within 2 years of this thing opening.
But that doesn't make sense let's say their Chicago casino does well, why is that different than New York?
Chicago's 1,000 miles away.
But if there's 3 casinos in New York anyway, why is it being a Bally's casino there that matters? Like, if it was Caesars, you think that Bally's calculus would be completely different?
I guess it's not the same market. Like, you know that when Showboat closed, it was a profitable casino, but they were just like, well, we've got all these other casinos in AC. We're going to keep that market anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think that Bally's has that level of loyalty.
Bally's is a very big casino company. You know, they have, what, 30 properties or something in the United States?
But is it any good?
I mean, I've not been, but by all accounts, at least, like, the Chicago property, I think, is going to be... Well, they're building the new casino. I guess they've got a smaller one now. But I think they've got some nice properties.
But all of that makes me think even more that they would shed this crappy Atlantic City one.
I don't know. I think it's... It's not exactly the same market. It's not like they have one in Queens and one in Staten Island or something.
Yeah.
Right? It's close enough to be like an interesting vacation destination for someone who wants to get out of the city and get to the beach for a night in the summer. You know, if you're, like I said, a mid-level player or a low roller at the New York casino, you're going to get comps in Atlantic City.
That's true.
And you will not get comps in New York because I think these casinos are going to be quite expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of like National Harbor where I just was, it's just an incredibly expensive casino to play in. I mean, Borgata's also quite nice, but it's quite a lot easier to get comps in Borgata than it is at National Harbor.
Yes, which is fascinating because Borgata does gangbusters, but I'm assuming MGM National Harbor also does quite well. So, of course, this immediately led to rumblings about will New Jersey now allow casinos in other parts of New Jersey because they've got this competition. I don't see it happening right away, but I still think if they put a casino in Midtown Manhattan at some point, the calls for a casino in Jersey City or something is going to be very high to try to keep some of that North Jersey market. But we'll see. Who knows?
In general, maybe it's a slight negative for Atlantic City that there's 3 casinos at all opening, but I don't think the companies that they are really matter at all.
Okay. We got a comment before all of this news from Matt from Utah, which is that while binging my way through the series, currently on episode 217, this was over a month ago, I took time out to listen to the most recent episode where you guys talked about NYC casinos. First and foremost, these do not seem like they're going to be bargain properties, much like a bunch of Aria-type properties, higher-end, expensive amenities, parking, etc. What do you think about that? I mean, you just said you think they're going to be...
Yeah, I think that's right. I think National Harbor is a good idea. That's what my equivalent would be, which is a very nice and expensive property.
Certainly seeing the renderings, they all look like they're going to be these massive, glimmering Aria-type properties, as Matt said. My initial thought of Bally's and the Bronx was this is going to be low-end, but nothing in New York City, when you only have 3 casinos in New York City, is going to be low-end. There's just no way.
You know this better than me. I don't really know, so maybe it's more of a question, but my sense would be if you're in Manhattan, like where your old apartment was, I assume it's much easier to get to the Bronx than it is to get to Queens.
That's true. There's a bunch of rich people there that probably play golf at that Bally's golf course. Matt also talked about Philly casinos in the same email. He said, I believe most of the Philly casinos exist due to poker. Parks, Rivers, and Live do huge poker business, and the people who play poker, like my uncle, will drop some money in the slots after they're done playing poker. When I was visiting him in July, his Live comp balance was about $2,500. He doesn't eat at the casino, no drinks, usually gets a cup of coffee, and at the end of the year turns his comps into slot dollars. The exception to this is Harrah's Philadelphia, which is where my uncle played poker until the pandemic and Live opened and Harrah's permanently closed their poker room. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Does poker make the Philadelphia casinos tick?
I mean, I think it's a complicated question. And you note that Pennsylvania doesn't split table games up in a way so you can see poker. Like, I'm sure in terms of numbers, the answer is no.
Right.
100%. I mean, poker, I feel like it's probably not a loss leader. They probably do bring in profits from poker. But, I mean, it's the same thing in Maryland. All 3 Maryland casinos, Horseshoe, Maryland Live, and National Harbor have poker rooms. And Maryland Live and National Harbor have very nice poker rooms. So... I mean, I think it's something that's important, especially for these locations that are serving more people with fewer casinos, unlike Atlantic City. So it probably at some level does bring people into the casino who then piss their money away at craps or slots or whatever after they play poker. But I wouldn't say it's a huge revenue driver. It probably adds some amount of incremental revenue, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's a huge, huge difference. I mean, there are, of course, people who just play poker everywhere, but I think they're a minority.
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction was, no way, poker is not a big revenue driver at all. But I think if you look at the way casinos are acting, all the sort of state casinos have pretty robust poker. I mean, I don't know about Hollywood Casino Perryville, but, you know, Maryland Live.
Right, right. Ocean Downs probably does not have a poker room. Rocky Gap.
I think it's probably a big draw for people who just want to go out for the evening and play some poker, right? So I think that they use that as a big draw, whereas if you look at Atlantic City, just about all the poker rooms are closing. And I think in the same email, Nat mentioned buffets and how buffets are basically just gone from everywhere, which is another thing that Atlantic City lost. So I don't know what the economics are of why a poker room is a draw or a buffet is a draw in one place, but then in Atlantic City, they've decided they don't need any of that stuff. Certainly in Atlantic City, poker must not be a big revenue driver because it's just gone from everywhere except for Borgata, which has a pretty big and bustling poker room, and then Harrah's has a smaller poker room, and there's one more poker room, right? I'm forgetting.
Tropicana, by the way.
Yeah, oh yes, Tropicana, which also has a smaller poker room, I feel like.
I mean, it used to be back when we started, or at least when I started going, every casino pretty much, maybe one or two didn't, but every casino had a poker room. You know, Caesars was down at the bottom of the elevators at the Ocean Tower, you know, and...
Was that before the big Black Friday of online poker getting shut down?
It was before and after. I think it was there for a while. Was it gone by the time you started going?
The poker rooms or online?
No, the poker room, like in Caesars at the bottom of the Ocean Tower elevators.
Yeah, it was definitely there. But I do think killing online poker also killed a lot of the interest in live poker.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just not top of mind to everything. I mean, poker was so incredibly hot around 2004, 5, 6, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah, Black Friday.
Faded quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so we talked about Hard Rock being in New York and Vegas. So Matt also had a question or a comment saying that episode number 126 is momentous due to the mention of Hard Rock acquiring the intellectual rights to Vegas. So what he's talking about is there used to be that Hard Rock Vegas property, but that was not owned by Hard Rock International. Yeah, it was licensed by a different company, the name.
Yeah, it was licensed by some company as compared to the East Coast ones, which were all Hard Rock Tribe of Seminole or whatever, right? Or the Seminole Tribe. The Hard Rock Tribe is not... what they are.
Awesome. So yeah. At that time, we didn't know that Hard Rock was going to buy it Mirage, so it was speculation of what is Hard Rock going to do with this license. So Matt's question is, will this have an incremental effect on the AC property with the Vegas location now well under redevelopment? It's interesting that Hard Rock has been second place to Borgata for a long time, and I'm wondering if this will help their quest for first place.
I don't see why it would necessarily impact things too much. I will say... It might matter a little bit, like it might help a little bit insofar as certainly when we were younger, before we started the podcast, one of the main reasons we went to Caesars, one of the reasons I personally started going to Caesars after the Hilton closed and all that is because Caesars was the property then that you could get comps in AC and Vegas, which was a big deal to me at the time.
When I started going to AC, I remember thinking, why would anyone put a bunch of play into anything that's not Caesars? Because of that network. Like, that's how big Total Rewards was at the time. I mean, it was, like, revolutionary, right? The sharing of the data and the ability to play in one place and get comps in another place. And now, you know, MGM obviously has it. I mean, all the casino companies have a shared network, pretty much.
All stole the Love Man's ideas.
Yeah, Gary Loveman, legend.
Legend.
NBA case study favorite, Gary Loveman.
Indeed.
I will say, like, yes, it would be nice if you could play at Hard Rock and get comps at Hard Rock, you know, from AC to Vegas or Vegas to AC. It's such a smaller network than MGM and Caesars. And I also think that people sort of have their locale and stick with it. So people go to AC and keep going to AC. People go to Vegas and keep going to Vegas. And the amount of people who are like, oh, I want to play here and be able to stay in Vegas is probably not as big as we think it is. So I don't think it's going to make a huge, huge impact.
Yeah, I don't think it'll make a big difference either.
We got some 10th anniversary questions because when I posted the request for 10th anniversary questions, it was like 6 hours before we were going to record the episode. And then it took 600 hours to actually post the episode. So we got some questions in the interim. Chuck F. asks, what casino restaurant is better than fine?
Casino restaurant.
Oh, casino and restaurant. Sorry.
Oh, that's totally different. Borgata is certainly better than fine, I think.
Agreed. I think Ocean is better than fine now.
I haven't been. I can't say, but...
I think Hard Rock's better than fine, but you strongly disagree.
Yeah. I mean, I sent you a mailer. They sent me. I'll have to go back.
I mean, you love Bally's. I wouldn't even say Bally's is fine.
When I talk about my love of resorts and Bally's, I understand that that is something specific to me, and that's not what a rational person would think or say, so...
Yeah, I would say every casino below the top three is fine. Yeah, I wouldn't say any of them are great, certainly. I don't think any of them are terrible. Resorts
except for Bally's.
Fine. Even Bally's is mostly fine. I wish they would do a little more with the space. There's something about the casino floor that just needs an update.
I don't know. Man, been there for so long. Anyway, but Borgata is certainly better than fine. Restaurant, what's better than fine? I feel like a lot of the places we've been, we like that Sitara we went to this year quite a lot. I thought that was good. Certainly, like, Doc's is much better than fine.
Yeah, Doherty's happy hour is better than fine. A lot of the happy hour places. Yeah. I think you thought Cardinal was just .. fine.
Cardinal was... Yeah, it was cheap. The value was excellent. The value was much better than fine, but the food itself, I think, was fine.
Angeloni's Club Madrid happy hour is way better than fine.
It's good, yeah. It's very good. Certainly my drink at Super Franco is better than fine.
I think it mostly the question is because we say things are fine so often. That is certainly our favorite descriptor.
Gilchrist, way better than fine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pancakes at Gilchrist are significant. Anything else at Gilchrist is .. fine.
No, yes. Everything at Gilchrist is fine, except for the pancakes, which are fantastic.
Yeah. He also asked a question that I'm not sure I'm ready to answer, which is, what casino podcast are you secretly happy didn't make it in the past 10 years?
I don't really have many. I know that Craig, at least historically, has listened to far more casino podcasts. I think you still do, frankly, than me. But for me, if it's something I don't like, I just will listen to 10 minutes of one episode and be like, this isn't for me. And I turn it off. And that's kind of it. There's one that I thought was particularly offensive that I can think of, Atlantic City based. I don't even think it was big enough to note. So
I don't think I my brain is not working today. I'm not happy to see any podcast end for sure. I find it fascinating. Like, it's hard. It's hard to do. So, like, seeing people get into it and then the sort of slow fade into stopping updating is always a little bit sad just because it's like, oh, man, you're putting a lot of effort into this thing. And there are certainly some podcasts that I just do not feel the vibe of that people love. So, like, I don't want something that other people really enjoy. So that's my super political answer. I do like being the only Atlantic City podcast. So take that however you want. 100% market share in the Atlantic City market. Hey, remember when the Press of AC posted a whole list of Atlantic City podcasts and we didn't make it?
Remember when Press of AC had podcasts for like 10 minutes?
Oh, that was great too.
It was good. I listened to them.
I'm not bitter or anything though.
They live recorded an episode in Irish Pub, I believe, one time.
How?
We need to do it.
What would this background audio be? It's probably amazing, the background audio. Like, think of the vibes of that episode.
Yeah.
They are pioneers.
You would never do that. Certainly the sound quality would not be up to your standards. You wouldn't allow us to do that.
We would need some very high quality equipment, mobile equipment. That's
or
for sure.
Or just not care.
A mixing board.
All right.
I think that's what they did. I think they just didn't care.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just probably like recorded on somebody's phone.
I do have to say, I listen to a lot of not gambling related podcasts that are quite popular, and the sound quality is shockingly bad. Some of them are hard for me to listen to because there's always one dude you cannot hear at all. There's someone else is way too loud. There's some sort of medical emergency or happening right behind some third person with all the sirens and stuff.
Yeah, I listen to a podcast that's been around for a very long time that's extremely popular, and every once in a while one of the dudes has to be remote, and it's like, we're far apart, we figured this shit out. And it sounds like somebody is holding their phone up to their computer speakers to record it while the dude's on Zoom. It's like, how is this your solution? It's ridiculous.
It's like the old times when you would record something off of someone else's cassette by just putting two recorders next to each other and playing one that was previously recorded from the radio or whatever into the other.
Oh, I remember doing that 100%.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Got to get all those good Metallica songs from the radio onto. Remember when Metallica was actually played on the radio? That's a whole other question.
It's still played on the radio some, I think. It's classic rock, certainly, but it is played on
yes.
the radio.
Oh, man, classic rock. Like Foo Fighters is classic rock now.
Oh, yeah.
Ace asks, of all the casinos or venues that have opened on the boardwalk over the last 10 years that are now closed, which one surprised you the most? So I don't think any casinos opened and closed in the last 10 years. Like, just to get that out of the way, right? All the closures happened a long time ago. But just trying to think of shocking closures in general on the boardwalk.
Yeah, I mean, Revel is the big one, certainly. But
yeah, I mean, that wasn't in the last 10 years.
That was more than 10 years ago, yeah. And we talked about that last episode, I believe.
I am trying to think of what has closed, either casinos or restaurants. Playground closing, like, I wouldn't say that was shocking.
That was whatever the opposite of shocking is.
But I think what was shocking is the deterioration of that pier from when we started going. Because I remember thinking, this is one of the best things in AC. That top level, the fountain show, the high-end stores.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was something that we went to every single trip.
Yeah, we would go to the sushi place, and certainly even well before that, when I was going in 2007 or whatever, you know, if I'm doing bad at gambling, I'm just going to the end and watching the Fountain Show. So the Fountain Show was still going when you were going, yes?
Yeah, it was still there at the very start.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think when it got replaced.
It was a long time ago, certainly.
My understanding, or at least the prevailing theory on why the Caesars Pier deteriorated so much, is that A, you couldn't park and go in and just do stuff at the pier and then leave without paying for parking or gambling. But also Caesars sort of neglected it because it takes people out of the casino, right? Which certainly, you know, Caesars also has a giant fucking mall at Caesars Las Vegas. So.
Right. All of the Las Vegas properties do.
Right. So is that a particular AC problem? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, just the deterioration of that asset, I guess, was very surprising at the time. I'm trying to think of other stuff. I mean, some restaurants that closed, Olan and Okache, I thought closing was somewhat surprising just because I thought they were good and pretty popular.
I don't think you can be surprised about any casino restaurant closing, frankly.
That's true. The turnover is so high.
Sometimes the casino just decides, no, we're going to run something here. And so they kick out whatever independent person.
Yeah, we've seen that a
ton. Something themselves. Like at Borgata when they did that to literally every single restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, Serendipity 3 only lasting like days at Ocean, I think it was pretty surprising. I mean, we did go once. I don't know if it was soft opening phase.
You guys went. I remember it was... seemed bad.
I think so little stuff was available that they had the items that they did have available.
Stars.
Yeah.
Yes. Correct.
So that wasn't great. The Yard closing is surprising just because it's such a large boardwalk facing space that you'd think they would be really trying to make work.
It could be successful, especially in summertime.
It seems like they just gave up on it. It's not even really open except for events anymore. Ripley's Believe It or Not on the boardwalk, that lasted a very long time.
Yeah,
that was a surprising closure to me.
Was anyone ever in there other than maybe for 2.5 months in the summer?
That was one of the places that I always had a note on my phone of like, if the gambling's going real bad, this is an option to go spend $12 or whatever it cost and go through this weird little place. And I never did it.
They always were selling dollar waters at the Ripley's Believe It or Not, if you remember. So,
yeah,
probably subsidized it for quite a while.
Very shocking closure, not on the boardwalk, Piccalilli.
That was a big one, yeah. Was it shocking? I don't know if it was totally shocking. It was frequently not terribly crowded,
yeah.
Though it was much more crowded, certainly, than
King's
Pub is. So,
one thing I would say I was sort of surprised, it wasn't really a closure, was Iron Room, the original location.
Mm, both, right?
Yeah, seemed to do very, very well, was highly, highly regarded, and then they... quote unquote moved it to the boardwalk, but it was always sort of just the dinner menu of some other space, and it just got lost in translation.
Did you ever go to the original one? I know Paul did and liked it a lot, but
yeah, I did go to the original one.
Mm-hmm.
I was not as high on the brunch as everybody else was.
I think Paul liked it a lot.
Yeah, but it was a cool space. The move, it just never really seemed to translate that well. When they announced they were moving to the boardwalk, I was thinking, this is going to be huge. You're going to have this awesome, highly regarded restaurant on the boardwalk with good cocktails. And then instead, what they put there was a divey music venue with a cocktail bar. And then Friday, Saturday nights, they would have a dinner menu that was called Iron Room. So especially knowing who the management team is behind that and seeing the successes they've had, that was kind of a surprising shift. But again, the restaurant game is crazy, and so you can't really be surprised by any of that stuff.
I feel like there's one or two that just aren't coming to me right now that as soon as we stop recording, I will be like, oh yeah, that was pretty surprising. But
yeah, I tried to go through our old episode notes and see stuff, because there's certainly been stuff closed that I've been really sad about on the show, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the AC Fan Expo at Showboat, the outdoor gym at Showboat, Limonada at Showboat.
Yeah.
That's another thing that lasted like 10 minutes, but again, it couldn't be less surprising.
Earl of Sandwich, of course, is the biggest
one. Oh, that was so disappointing. I mean, that closed in a whole casino closure, but...
Yeah.
Man.
It's the haters. They had to shut down the whole casino to get the Earl Sandwich out of town. That's fine. I just go to the one in the rest stop every time I go to Atlantic City now. It's the best part of the trip.
Is the Earl of Sandwich and the rest stop as good as...
Yeah, I think it's normal. I mean, it's like 50% more expensive, but...
It sucks.
It's good.
50% more expensive than a casino. I mean, rest stops...
Probably like 25% more expensive than the casino.
When we drive to Cape Cod to see my brother-in-law and we stop at a Connecticut rest stop, it's like $70 to eat at McDonald's. It's freaking insane.
I found that... If you got a cooler with drinks, it's much more reasonable. The food prices are marked up 50% or something compared to normal, and the drink prices are probably literally marked up 400%, 500%.
At rest stops, like if you get a soda?
Yes.
If you get one of them iced teas?
the soda's like $6 at rest stops, and you're like, oh yeah. My God, this is a dollar at a normal McDonald's.
Yeah, I thought I was going to hack it because I was going to go do the $6 Dunkin' meal deal, and I had it all entered, and it was like, this Dunkin' doesn't take the $6 meal deal. You can even order on your phone, and it wouldn't take it. Terrible.
They even take it in Manhattan, but not at the rest stop?
They do. We got one more very long email. Do you want to read this tome from Steve K?
Do you have time? I know you have a hard cut off in a second.
Let's do it.
All right. So Steve K says, I am platinum status with MGM. Just got back from my first trip to Vegas in about 10 years. MGM gave me flight reimbursement as free play, which was $460, $350 resort credit, $150 additional free play, and a room for 5 nights. They offered at check-in to upgrade me to a corner suite, and I said, sure. All was good, or so I thought. When I arrived back and went to my local MGM, National Harbor, which I've been going to several times each week for the last 4 years and was never denied a food comp after playing, I was stunned to be denied a food comp. I asked the floor manager why I was being denied. She explained on my recent Vegas trip I was overcomped. I have since learned that the upgraded suite I was given had a value of $1,100 per night times 5, equaling $5,500, plus all the other comps noted above, which made my comp value for the Vegas trip about $6,500. In Vegas, I played 26 hours total at an average bet of $120. The issue I had is I had no idea when MGM offered the suite upgrade that I was expected to gamble 10 to 12 hours a day, which the boss at National Harbor later told me, if the average bet was $120. So I am now considered overcomped. Also had no idea that comps used at one MGM property will affect comps at all MGM properties. The National Harbor boss told me my level of play for a standard room comp at Aria would only require a daily play of 4 to 5 hours, which is how much I played each day at Aria. The moral of the experience is, if they offer a free upgrade to a suite, think twice as it will affect comp levels going forward if comps are important to you. Or at least go to the host office before you start gambling and ask the level of play that will be expected for the fancy room upgrade not to affect future comps. If I would have known this ahead of time, I would have declined the suite upgrade and have been happy in a standard room. Did you highlight that because I messed up?
No, I highlighted it. I highlighted that comps used at one MGM property will affect comps at all MGM properties. That is 100% correct. I mean, they'll certainly affect that region more. Like when I go to Vegas, the last 2 times I think I've stayed in MGM properties. And when I go to Vegas, I just don't gamble all that much. And I certainly don't really focus on one property. So I'll be staying at one hotel and wandering around and splitting my gambling between 5 hotels, and MGM doesn't like that. So what will usually happen is all my Vegas MGM comps are gone, and my AC comps seem to be affected, but not as drastically as my Vegas comps.
So just as the TLDR, because I know it's hard to listen to someone who's kind of droning on in the reading voice, basically it sounds like Steve went to Aria for 5 nights and was offered a free quote-unquote upgrade to a suite, and when he came back to his local property, they won't give him comps there anymore because they say he was overcomped, and a lot of that, or the vast majority of it, was the value of their quote-unquote free comp in Aria, which is pretty surprising to me, frankly. I think it's a bit short-sighted by the casino, right?
Which part of it is the most surprising?
The fact that, allegedly, this upgraded suite that he got comped is like a big deal and is somehow accounted for quite differently in the system than like a normal room. That's quite surprising. The choice that they're making of which room to put him in, that's a choice they make, but I don't think it should affect the numbers on the other side.
If I was offered an upgrade at check-in, I wouldn't have even considered that it would affect my future comps. I could see where it would be related to your past play.
Yep.
But the upgrade at check-in, I mean, you can get upgraded at check-in at a Marriott down the street, right? Like, this just feels in my brain completely unrelated, right? And so I would never think, oh, I booked one room and they upgraded me to another room. Now I need to play according to that room? That's really weird.
That's crazy to me. It would make perfect sense if maybe they're unhappy with him to the point of next time he goes to Vegas, they will not offer him the suite. That, I think, is the appropriate way to handle that situation. But the fact that he walked into his local casino and they're like, we can't comp you anymore because you are basically at a negative comp balance in the system, it's crazy to me. It's completely insane. And I have to say, personally, I don't know when this happened, but
November, I believe.
Right. The MGM CEO or whatever, one of the earnings calls, I believe, this summer, you know, when there was this big downturn in Vegas tourism, I think he said, this is partially our fault. We, like, lost the thread on pricing, and we've been doing all this crazy stuff, and we need to cut it out. But, you know, apparently they haven't cut anything out, because this is totally nuts to me. You're just begging the player not to play at your property anymore.
I mean, I will say, this feels very MGM to me. Caesars seems much more forgiving of this kind of stuff. Even if I go and just no play Caesars or really low play Caesars, they seem to understand your play patterns better. And especially, they have all this data on what he does at National Harbor.
No, it doesn't make any sense. If I were the casino, what's the rational thing for me to do? Which direction should I look in? I should only be looking forward, towards forward play, right? Whatever's happened in the past has happened in the past, and it matters not at all, except insofar as it impacts future stuff. Like, if someone takes a comp and literally no-plays you, then obviously you can say, well, this isn't good, this could happen again, or whatever, and it should impact things. But the fact that Steve is obviously a good player, he's platinum at MGM, and by all accounts goes there all the time, why would you even tally up a balance? Yeah. Like, it just doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem like it's in the casino's own self-interest.
Well, I will say, I think they're doing that more than we realize. And a long time ago, I hope I'm not messing up everything down to which podcast this was, but Tim and Eric on The Better Life, I'm pretty sure, had a casino manager from Harrah's, Philadelphia. I think I have those details right on the podcast. And he said the one thing he wishes that players change their mindset about was treating their comps like any other loyalty program. Like, I'm using up what I've built up points wise, and I'm not necessarily going to get those things going forward unless I continue. So he was very much looking at it as a past thing.
Which, that's fine.
But that is not how anybody thinks about it. And it also doesn't really make sense for
what Steve's talking about.
MGM, especially specifically National Harbor, who knows his very consistent play to a T. I will say one huge caveat when reading all this is I don't 100% believe everything that, say, a pit boss says. Yeah. And, like, I'm not sure why they would have such detailed information about how Las Vegas comps.
But it comes from somewhere. The numbers that the pit boss said, it sounds like she saw that there was an upgrade. They said in the system there was some value assigned to that. And it's possible it could have been a host, too, right? Who would have insight into that. It just doesn't make sense. If Steve didn't play at the level they were expecting in Vegas for whatever reason, by all means, comp him $50 for food instead of $100 for food in National Harbor. But just being like, you can't get comps until you paid back what you took from us? It's just stupid. It's short-sighted. I think it's a bad idea. It hurts Steve, yes, but I think it hurts themselves as well. I mean, they're a bit insulated because, let's say you live in Northern Virginia, there truly is no other game in town, unless you're willing to drive to Maryland Live, which is quite far away, or like Danville or Bristol, which is even farther away. So
I guess you sort of bring up what the counterpoint is. If you want to play the other side, we're both acting very shocked by this. But from National Harbor's standpoint, they have all his data. They know he's going to go four times a week, right? So they don't really need to offer him until he comes back and proves it. So to them, maybe they feel like, let's get our money back on this before we start comping again. It seems weird, but
it's not their money. I don't know. Certainly no one at National Harbor is paying for these comps in Vegas.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I think it's dumb. I would personally be outraged and be doing anything I could to change my property if it were plausible. That's outrageous.
Yeah. But MGM is known for this kind of stuff, so
I don't think it makes sense. I think it's MGM shooting themselves in the foot.
Agreed.
By all means, lower someone's comps. Be like, hey, looks like on your last trip you were a $50 a day food comp player, not a $100 a day food comp player, so that's what your comps are going to be. That's fine. That's very reasonable, but just like, we tabulated this, took this much in comps, and you didn't give us back the play we were expecting, so you get nothing for the next 3 months until you pay off your debt. It's dumb.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in MGM's interest to do that.
Seems like they like doing that sort of stuff, though.
Yep. Like I said, if they're truly trying to chase Steve away, then they're succeeding. And if they have truly any other goal in mind, I don't think it's right. I mean, the way you were talking, you can't really treat your players like drug addicts that, they will be back because, you know, they need their fix.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some players you could, but you will lose players if you do that.
Yeah. I know Borgata, I think even before the MGM merger, like a lot of the big sort of comp harvester type people said that Borgata was really rough on people who came and got free play and didn't play enough. And the sense was sort of like, well, we're Borgata, we can do that. And I think that is even more true at some place like National Harbor because of the reasons you mentioned where it's like, oh, what are you going to do? Go to Cherokee?
I mean, I could go to Maryland Live, but I don't live where most people live that go to National Harbor. So
Virginia does not have casinos?
Danville, Bristol.
Is that like way out west?
Danville's in the middle of the state, but all the way at the south. And Bristol is, on the border with Tennessee. Basically in Tennessee.
Is Bristol where that Buc-ee's is going to go? Let's talk about Buc-ee's.
Yeah, Bristol's where the Hard Rock is that I stopped at.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, it's in Kingsville, basically. I mean, it's in Bristol, technically, but Kingsville, Kingstown? I don't know. But anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. If you want to reach out to us or any of our other listeners, you can do so at our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/doforawin, where I will surely check all the time. Find all of our great content at doforawin.com. Reach out to Craig on Twitter at doforawin or me at Kyle Askin, and send Craig questions at doforawin@gmail.com. We love getting your questions. We love talking about them on air. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Steve. I thought that was actually very interesting, despite complaining to Craig that it was too long for me to be able to read.
We are out of questions. The mailbag is empty, except for one message that says that the resort fee has gone up at Hard Rock.
Good information.
That was in July. So I'm a little overdue on updating the resort fees page. A little bit. But Keith, I got your email, and someday I'll update that page.
All right. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we'll get at least one more episode out, I hope, in 2025. Though, frankly, I would take, well, one episode beyond this one in 2025. Yeah, right. Maybe zero episodes out. Maybe this will come out in 2026.
Maybe. I feel this is appropriate for the podcast, but sitting right in front of me now, because one of the cards I found when looking through cards with Holden is the Bill Ripken face.
Oh, yeah.
1989 Fleer card.
The actual face.
Oh, yeah. Actual face with face on the bat. So having this right in front of me while I podcast just feels right.